The only way.
The Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Division will come to order at 8:30. Sort of. The first item on our agenda is the overview of organizations, and today's organization is library. And I am trying to figure out how libraries are funded. But it isn't simple, and it isn't easy. But the librarians, the state librarian, the person that knows more than anybody else, except for the librarians themselves in the individual libraries, about how the funding comes. And the state librarian is part of the Department of Education in Minnesota. And Suzanne Miller is our state librarian, and I welcome you.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Good morning to you, Madam Chair, and to members. My name is Suzanne Miller. I am the State Librarian and Director of the Division of State Library Services at the Department of Education. The State Library Services has been charged under Chapter 134 with the responsibility to support the provision, development, and coordination of libraries and library services in Minnesota. We work with all types of libraries. That includes academic libraries, school library media centers, public libraries, and special libraries. We make sure that each of them has some level of service and that they coordinate together. As part of the Department of Education, you can see that there's an organization chart in the packet that you gave us. We are part of the academic, Division of Academic Excellence, and there's a special organizational chart just for our division, so it looks something like this. We have 13.5 FTE, and our division includes two different parts. The first part of our division is in our Roseville office. Our Roseville office program is concerned with supporting the development and administration of libraries, the libraries that serve their communities. We administer state aid programs for the regional library basic system support, multi-type, multi-county aid, library construction and bonding grants, regional library telecommunications aid, and the department's share of the Electronic Library of Minnesota. We also administer the Federal Library Services and Technology Grant Act, known as LSTA. We administer occasional statewide grant programs, such as in the last 5 years, we've administered at least 3 Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation grants for libraries, and we're currently in the process of developing a consolidated grant application, again, for Minnesota on the Opportunity Online Hardware Grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. We provide training and support for libraries in the E-Rate program. We collect statistics annually from public libraries each year by April 1st, and we're in the process of developing a similar program for school library media centers. We are the go-to people for libraries. When libraries have operational questions, they come to us for consistent responses. This actually maximizes the time for both the libraries and the other agencies that we work with and ourselves. We are able to make use of our contacts with other agencies so that the inquirer doesn't need to go to multiple places around state government to find their answers. Our daily activities include advising and consulting with local libraries on a wide range of topics, including application of state law, human resource issues, data privacy issues, policy questions, development questions, audit and reporting classifications, and how to establish a foundation, and so on. We consult on library development activities, including strategic planning, construction, and library board training and staff development. We also support school library media centers to the extent possible and their efforts to provide a quality, excellent education to students. The other part of our division is the Faribault operations. We operate the Braille and Talking Book Library. This program is a collaborative project of the state of Minnesota with the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. Unlike the Roseville operation, which serves the institutions that then in turn serve the local library and the patrons, the Braille and Talking Book Library is a direct service to patrons. We actually deal with the residents of the state of Minnesota. It is those residents who are unable to use or read standard print. In addition to the blind, this includes children with an organically related reading disability, such as some forms of dyslexia, the Iraq vet who returns with a disability, and our elderly population who struggle with vision loss due to diabetes, macular degeneration, or just that inescapable effect of aging. The library also supports the Academy for the Blind, the students and teachers at the Academy, and responds to the needs of teachers throughout Minnesota who have visually impaired students. The state of Minnesota has an exemplary level of library service and resource sharing as a result of the integration and cooperation of academic, school, public, and special libraries. The model capitalizes on regional cooperation for economic efficiencies while retaining significant respect for the different communities, their different needs, and local control. In your file, there are two maps of two different regional systems. You will see that one is a multi-county, multi-type library cooperation system, and the other is the regional public library system. Multi-county, multi-type library cooperation systems include libraries of all types which share services and resources. The statutory directive includes facilitating resource sharing, long-range planning for cooperative programs, and the development of services and programs. Many of the multi-type systems have focused their attention on school media centers and their needs. This is an area where the need was identified because no one else is really filling that need. And the systems have sought to bridge the gap to make sure that schools are included in the overall cooperation statewide. Their activities include development of a library bibliographic database, an interlibrary loan program for schools and special libraries, and library and teacher training in information literacy. The multi-type regions are funded 100% by the legislature and their state aid program. Regional public library systems, which you hear about probably more often, are multi-county governmental units established to ensure that all Minnesota residents have at least a basic level of service available to them. How this service is delivered depends on the local decision regarding how they wish to provide library services to their citizens. Six of our regions have chosen to be consolidated regions, one is a federated region, and five are federated regions with consolidated services or centralized services, such as automation and interlibrary loan delivery systems. Regional library systems are established under Chapter 134 and formalized either by joint powers agreements or contracts with participating cities and counties. Under the consolidated model, library services are provided through a central administrative office to counties in the region. The region is operated as a single library unit with multiple branches. The regional system provides administration, staff, library materials, automation, and other library services. The method of service and location of physical libraries is determined by the governing board that is composed of representation from all participating cities and counties. A federated regional library system provides services to the member libraries, but provides no direct service to patrons. The member libraries operate independently. No funding is provided to the regional library by cities and counties. We only have one purely federated system in Minnesota, and that is MELSA, it is the metro area. The remaining five systems are federated with a regional centralized services being offered, where economic efficiencies support collaboration, such as in automation, cataloging, perhaps bookmobile service. Member libraries remain autonomous, with cities and counties providing funds for services as determined by regional concept and the governing board of the region. Regional public library systems receive regional basic system support through the state, and dependent upon their master agreements, receive local funds to support centralized services such as automation. Regional library telecom aid is also used to help support the regional public library system. This is critical support for connectivity and core infrastructure for statewide collaboration and resource sharing. As demands increase, faster and more bandwidth is needed in order to provide access to critical information resources and to maintain library services. RLPA has helped to ensure libraries in rural areas are able to afford adequate connection capacity to serve local needs. In order to better understand the actual formulas and how the funding for these three programs is distributed, I would like to introduce Don Bolger from our program finance division at the Department of Education, who will further review the distribution formulas for these state aid programs.
Good morning.
Mr. Bolger.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Representative. I'm John Bolger from the Minnesota Department of Education Program Finance. I'm here to talk about the three major funding programs that we have: basic library system support, multi-type library, and regional library telecommunications aid. The regional library basic system support program is authorized in Chapter 134, and the purpose is to encourage resource sharing, extend library services to rural areas, and promote collaboration statewide through 12 regional public library systems. The Minnesota Department of Education State Library Services distributes funding annually to the 12 regional public library systems based upon a statutory formula. The formula is in Chapter 134, and the funds are allocated based on the following four factors and percentages. Number one, county population, 57.5% of the funds available are distributed on a basis of county population. Number two, county areas. In square miles, we have a lot of areas that are very large in the state, and that does impact cost of delivery of service. The third factor is 5%, which is of the amount, is allocated equally. And four, there's an equalization factor, which accounts for 25% of the statutory formula. The governor's proposal maintains an entitlement level of $13,570,000 funding for the program in FY10 and FY11. Proposes to change the appropriation basis from a 90-10 percentage basis to an 80-20 percentage basis. This provides no change in revenue on a fiscal year basis, but it does changes when the organizations will receive their cash payments. Now, each regional public library system has a governing board with representation based upon the system's joint powers agreement. How regional libraries system funds are allocated to the regional libraries to provide services to support the branch or member libraries is governed by the system's joint powers agreement and governing board. The multi-type, multi-county system program that's authorized under Minnesota Statute 134.351 through 134.36. This is a state aid program that provides seven multi-county, multi-type cooperation systems providing libraries with defined county regions. The formula is allocated on this basis. 60% of the funds are allocated equally among the systems. 20% of the funds are allocated on a basis of square miles, and 20% of available funds is allocated on an equal amount per percent of population. The governor's proposal maintains an entitlement level of $1.3 million funding for the program in FY10 and FY11, and proposes to change the appropriation basis from a 90-10 basis to a 80-20 basis. Again, this provides for no change in revenue on a fiscal year basis, but it does change when the organizations would receive their cash payments. Again, each multi-type library system has a governing board, and how the system funds are allocated to provide programs and services is governed by the system's joint power agreement and decisions. The Regional Library Telecommunications Aid Program, RLTA, provides state aid to libraries for data and video access costs and other related costs to improve or maintain electronic access to the state information infrastructure and to facilitate resource sharing. The funding is distributed on a prorated actual cost basis for regional library system branches members who meet the program criteria to the amount of funding available. This formula is adjusted for actual expenditure data. The funding provided by this program is limited to one line for the library building and two lines for headquarters. Now, the governor's proposal maintains an entitlement level of $2.3 million funding for the program in FY10 and FY11 and proposes to change the appropriation basis from a 90-10 basis to an 80-20 basis. Again, this provides no change in revenue on a fiscal year basis, but it does impact when the organizations would receive their cash payments.
There are actually two additional state-funded programs that we really want to add into the mix here. In order to complete a basic suite of licensed databases for schools and public libraries through the K-12 Education Committee, $900,000 is allocated annually for the Electronic Library of Minnesota. This valuable tool assists us in ensuring that students have the tools necessary to support learning and information literacy skills. It also places a wealth of information resources in health, business, and education in our communities for our residents. In addition, bonding money supports library accessibility and improvement grants. This matching grant program partners the state with local communities to ensure quality library facilities that are accessible to all. In addition, State Library Services administers the Library Services and Technology Act grant from the federal government. These funds are used to support, in part, the Braille and Talking Book Library and some of the staff in our division. LSTA funds also provide schools and public libraries with the ability to participate in the interlibrary cooperation background provided by Minitex. Minitex is a leader in the infrastructure development, providing the capacity to find resources through the MinLink system and through ELM. They deliver resources through a complex model of collaboration with regional and local libraries. Through the State Library Interagency Cooperative Agreement with Minitex, school and public libraries are able to participate in training and use of these resources. In addition, a small portion of LSTA is set aside each year for a competitive grant program. To date, this program provides approximately $500,000 in competitive funds each year for special projects and programs. These grants are not for general operating expenses. All libraries are eligible to apply for LSTA grants. One of the things I was asked to address were revenue sources, and in your packet there is a fairly simplified pie chart about where the revenue sources are for Minnesota libraries. In the aggregate, in 2007, you'll see that 85% of the funding for Minnesota libraries came from local entities, that is, the cities and counties. We're just beginning the process of collecting similar data for school libraries. We do not have that. Those school libraries and academic libraries are funded through their institutions, and there is no direct funding stream or separate funding stream for those particular organizations at this time. As far as how do they spend their funding, the expenditures in the aggregate, again, another pie chart there available to you will show you what the libraries spend their funds on. This is the most recent data. We're currently in the process of collecting 2008 data. But you will note that 63% of the funds are expended on staff who are available to respond to customer needs. This includes things like everything from checking out materials to providing programming and customer assistance. More detailed data on regional library systems is available and is included. The data is provided to us as part of our oversight activities. I provided fairly accurate, you can look and see which region you happen to be in, and there is a separate sheet for each region. It identifies where the funds are coming from and where the individual regional system has determined that they will spend their, they actually did spend their money in 2008. More granular detail is available on this, but this gives you an overview of the regional focus and the specific income streams that they have in each region. You will know the last page of the packet defines the categories. If you have questions about what's included in each category, such as a customer service would include things like library materials, interlibrary loans, database licensing, bookmobiles, etc. Keep in mind that each system is unique, and there is a significant difference between consolidated systems that directly serve the public and federated regions that actually serve the libraries that in turn serve the public. Also note that three of the systems have found it necessary to use reserve funds in order to meet operational expenses last year. The last chart is the long legal size chart is the projected 2009 expenditures for the regional system. This is also for, you'll notice that the regional systems, regardless of type, budgets and state funding most heavily on central operations, which support library efficiency. This allows the local dollars to be invested locally for direct community service. Libraries are birth-to-death institutions. Each type of library, public, school, academic, and special library plays a different role at each critical juncture of a person's life. Libraries facilitate developing young minds, targeting kindergarten readiness and literacy skills for preschoolers, supporting student achievement, and developing the joy and value of reading, advancing education and research in business and academic institutions, providing resources for business and employment. In an age when continuous learning for success, libraries provide opportunities for lifelong free choice learning. Access to resources for making good decisions for community action, family health, family wealth are available in your local library. When our ability to read falters as age advances, it's important to keep the mind active. This fights isolation and improves the quality of life. The Braille and Talking Book Library picks up the ball at this point and serves the aging population. Yes, we provide computers, we provide internet connections, we provide music, we provide programming, but the goal and the outcomes of all of the activity in libraries is to provide equitable access to resources in order to keep people educated, employed, and engaged. Specific library services are determined locally to meet the needs of the immediate community. One library may focus on more popular materials and another on more educational materials. As more and more is demanded of libraries as a community resource during challenging times, funding to keep the doors open is a primary concern. In the past weeks, you only need to look at the local newspaper to see a flurry of activity about libraries, possible closures, how important libraries are to our residents. The libraries themselves are caught between the needs of the community and the limitations in this time of economic challenge. Libraries of all ages and are for all ages and stages. They are a community asset supported by a complex, collaborative funding stream in order to ensure universal access. As many of you have heard, and I will repeat, libraries will get you through times with no money better than money will get you through times with no libraries. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On this one, when you discuss the expenditure categories, other is larger than collection. What can you tell us about other?
On the budget?
It's the expenditure strategy, 2007 expenditure.
That story. Would include things like the, when that would include things like programs. So, for instance, there's a lot of outreach, and it also includes facilities. So it's keeping the lights on, keeping the doors open, making sure that, the floor, their supplies for a floor to be cleaned, etc. And when libraries have to cut services or have cuts in their budgets, often it is the collections that will suffer because they want to make sure that the doors stay open and what is there is continues to be available to the patrons.
And then as I was looking at both the regional library basic system support and this, the seven county metro area is one district, right?
Yes, it is.
But it comprises 55% of the population. I was surprised as I looked at these charts that it wasn't. If you look at that at that last number, that it wasn't significantly beyond some of the other regions, and. I'm wondering if I'm misreading something, because you would assume that 55% of the population as opposed to all of the others, which would have...
Are you talking about the amount that's allocated
to
them?
That show the total amount spent on operations and library, for example. I look at the bar, that last number gives me the perspective, but there are some, for example, East Central goes up to 1.8 million. Where was the message?
If I'm understanding you correctly, NELSA is a federated region, and they do not do direct customer service. They support the libraries through customer service, so primarily they would support programming, special programming that is done throughout the entire metro area, whereas East Central is a centralized, is a consolidated system, and the consolidated system, they actually provide all of the services from the center, and their whole focus is on direct service to the customer.
Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Miller, on the regional public library system, the multi-type library, it's still a little unclear as to the differences. I mean, is there overlapping at all here? Could you explain a little bit more the differences between the two systems and their functions?
Ms. Miller.
Representative, the multi-type systems were established after the regional public library system. The regional public library systems were focused specifically on serving public libraries only. And in 1980, the multi-type systems were established in order to start bridging and integrating the different types of libraries to build better collaboration or increased collaboration. And more we see that our regional public library systems are serving a more multi-type function. The multi-types have worked very hard to make sure that they are serving a gap, and that's why they serve the school media centers more so than they serve than others. They really have worked to bridge the gap as opposed to focus exclusively on public library services.
Representative Rudolph.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Also, on the expenditure sheet, I noticed that. If I were to contribute, a dollar bill to a library, 63 cents is going to staff and basically 11 cents toward buying books and other collections. I don't know. It seems I know that education is very labor intensive. I know the schools are, apparently libraries are as well. But one would expect if you're contributing money to a library, you're expecting that more of it would be spent for books.
Ms. Miller.
Representative Erdahl, there is so much more than just books and libraries any longer, and the library staff is required to intermediate. It's been that way probably for a long time, but we have the ability to, with highly skilled staff to access materials that not only are purchased by the local library, but again, the materials like the Electronic Library of Minnesota that is provided by the state dollars. Yes, it's as heavy in staff intensity, but the staff is what makes it possible for the user to get what they need, and regardless of whether or not it's local or if it's long distance. And this is where the collaboration across the state is really helpful, because the material may not be in your local library, so your collection has shrunk perhaps, but the staff is able to identify where the material might be somewhere else in Minnesota and get that to you fairly quickly because of the interlibrary cooperation that's going on at this time.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Miller. Well, that brings up the point that I wanted to raise. I didn't hear in all of your complex and historical-based funding formulas anything that really addresses sort of the way modern libraries work, which is as sort of a unified whole, that no matter where you live in the state of Minnesota, you can get a book or a video or a CD out of any other library, which is wonderful, and I think that's great service, but it seems like we have a funding system that doesn't recognize the disequal burdens of that. I've gone to Minnesota Library Association events in which people have come up to me and thanked me for living in Minneapolis and its ability to fund a rich research collection and how they use it all the time. Minneapolis used to have two people full-time doing nothing but filling requests for library materials from Minneapolis and sending them out to the rest of the state. But there's nothing that I heard in your formula distributions across two different types of regional systems that really rewards those libraries, whether they're in greater Minnesota or in the metro area, that really step up and put more money into expensive collections, that put more money into packing up and sending those unique materials to other parts of the state. And it just seems to me that we need to evolve the money to be based on who is actually buying the materials that are being used and who is... You know, there needs to be something in all those layers of funding formulas, and maybe I missed it, that actually rewards that local library for whatever they contribute. And it may be that a library in greater Minnesota is really, because of its interest of its community, really has a really rich Minnesota history collection that is rare, and they share it. But there's got to be some way to sort of have the money flow where the demands are and where the collections are. And I didn't hear the collection being any part of those formula factors. I didn't hear anything related to interlibrary loan volume as a factor. Is that correct?
Ms. Miller.
Representative, the funding formulas are not based on usage. Development of the local collection is really a local decision and a local determination. And considering that 85% of the funding for libraries is local, it's the local decision as to how they want to develop their collection. But libraries have worked together, and the regional basic system supports the money that flows to Minitech from the legislature, the federal money that we provide to Minitech in order to facilitate interlibrary cooperation, actually is in order to support and help develop that interlibrary cooperation. We're trying to help defray the cost of sharing the material. But there is no focus on the collection itself and helping particular libraries develop their collections. Some regions do, and you will find if you look at the how MELSA expends their money in their future and what they will spend in 2009, you'll see a very large bar on other. They actually reimburse as a region their local members for sharing their material. So they do have a formula that shares back to their region. but it's really dependent upon how their regional board is determined that they want to spend that regional basic system support. So there is some sharing back based on what materials get borrowed, but it's not written into our state formula.
Representative Hobbs, quickly.
Very quickly. Yeah, well, that's a challenge. You can answer this in some other form than orally, then if we're going to be quick, but I would like to know your opinion on the relationship of the federal dollars and county dollars and state dollars as it pertains to the maintenance of effort that county commissioners often complain puts them in a bind and that they can't fairly distribute their money in times of need. My second question, when the Association of the Blind had their day at the Day at the Hill or were at the Capitol, they were carrying their priority sheet, if you people recall their priority sheet. And one of the terms on there was the governor's hiring freeze. And that's very understandable. That's what we should be doing. But caught in that hiring freeze was in general interpretation that it was state and federal employees. So the Braille Talking Book Library has, has federal employees' positions that are not being hired, and they're going without. And it's hard to get if this is an intended consequence or an unintended consequence. Do you know?
To your first point on the maintenance of effort, I would defer to an extensive written response, but I would briefly state that maintenance of effort is what has been put in place to ensure that all residents of Minnesota participate in ensuring that everyone, border to border, has access to library services, and that it facilitates our exemplary sharing program across the state. As far as the specifics of that program, I think we would need to look at things more directly. As to your second point, and that is the Braille Talking Book Library, yes, we have lost, I've been in this position for 5 years, and we've lost 4 staff members in the last 5 years, which is a concern to me, because it's a very heavily used operation. We serve 11,000 people. We have had to put caps on the amount of materials we send out each day. We cap it at 11,000 items per day. 1,100. And we've had to change our working conditions in order to ensure that our staff are not injured, because it's a very physical job, because you actually have to go in. This is a direct patron service, and you have to go and pull the materials and ship them, and it's a very active service. The reduction in staff means I have 1 clerical and 2 librarians answering phone calls for 11,000 patrons a day. And it becomes an issue, but we are caught in the freeze. The freeze is definitely, we're working through that. The department is trying to work through that at this time.
Just one follow-up, because if you don't mind, I really would go ahead quick. Let's just go back to the federal employee positions that are caught in the state freeze. Does not seem logical to me. I'm sure there's an answer. If that's happening, I'm sure there's a logical answer why it's happening. But you would think if the federal government was paying for the position, that it wouldn't be too much of a savings to the state government. And to put a freeze on that seems to be really counterproductive. Help me understand this.
The funds that are authorized for, I mentioned that I administer the Library Services and Technology Act grant funds, and the funds set aside funding for those positions. So that the funding that's there has been set aside out of the Library Services grant, and if we do not spend the money on that, we can redirect that money to other appropriate federally authorized expenditures. So there is, it's not money that's lost to the state.
Let me just, if I understand it, I'm going to want to repeat it so I understand it. So it is your, it is the priority to use the employee position money for some other source that you feel is a higher priority in that budget. Is that correct?
It is my priority to put it into personnel, but it is not, but this is not, because of the freeze, we've been unable to put it where we have prioritized it.
Thank you, Ms. Miller.
I'm done.
Ms. Keith.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Elaine Keith, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Library Association. And I have with me Mark Ranum, who is the legislative chair for the Library Association, and he's actually going to go first.
Okay, Mr. Ranum, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. My name is Mark Ranum. I'm the legislative chair for the Minnesota Library Association this year. Also in my real life, I'm the director of one of the regional public library systems in the state, the Plum Creek Library System that serves the nine southwest counties. I appreciated the ability to listen to our state librarian's testimony. She is a state employee, which puts some burden on her that I do not carry. So just so you all know, I may be a little more straightforward in some of my comments. I wanted to start today and talk to you a little bit. You heard a lot about the data and how libraries are structured. I just want to talk to you a little bit about what's really happening in libraries, give you an idea about what libraries are doing in their communities and where libraries are heading for the future. First of all, you should know that library use is exploding. When people ask me what business I'm in, I say libraries, and business is good. The libraries have had, as you probably have seen in the local and statewide media, a number of articles talking about the exploding use of libraries around the state. This mimics an exploding use around the country. 75% of people reported using their library at least once nationally last year. That's an incredible number when you think about the number of people walking into libraries. And we see that every day. In the Douglas County Library in Alexandria, they have 500 people a day walking through the doors. So when you think about the staff intensity that's needed to run library services, think about that many customers coming through the doors of a business during a day and the kind of things that they're looking for. The other aspect that's going on is be aware that reading is up. People are reading more, which is a good sign, because we know that when people read, all sorts of other things happen. Readers volunteer in their communities. They attend arts events. They also attend sporting events and do arts outdoors activities more often. They even exercise at higher rates than non-readers, which I'm not quite sure about in my own experience, but still. People walk into libraries and want basically one of four things. They either want to use materials and check materials out. They want to ask experts for help in finding information and ask for assistance. They want to access technology and electronic resources that they don't have access to anywhere else. And they also want to attend programs like story times and book clubs and community events that the library is unique in providing that help support their individual needs, their family needs, and their community needs. Just to speak a little bit about the technology, Ramsey County reported, as I was talking to the director, Susan Nemitz, of the Ramsey County Library recently, she said computer use was up 38% last year in their libraries. And now that libraries have wireless connections in most libraries, where you can walk in and use your laptop and connect to the wireless network, we can also keep statistics on how many people are using that. That was up 61% last year, the number of people walking into a library with their laptop and using the wireless connection to access the Internet. Also, libraries provide computer classes. We provide everything from how to start an email account to how to find a job online to just basics about computer use. Those kind of classes were up 24% in Ramsey County, and we're seeing that everywhere. As you all know that nowadays, too, when you're looking for a job, you can't do it by walking door to door and filling out paper applications. You just don't do that anymore. People fill out applications online. They search for jobs online. And in this really tough economic time, one of the other aspects about electronic government is that people access unemployment online as well, and libraries have become a big source for people to come in and get information about accessing not only unemployment but other social services that they need to bridge the gap when they've lost their job or they run into other kinds of family or individual crisis. In libraries, we've got, you know, users from the very youngest, parents and caregivers bringing in the smallest children for baby story times, all the way to people who are unable to leave their homes or leave the nursing home and need people to bring them books and materials. We've got the full range of students and parents coming in to make sure that kids are well-educated and ready for work when they get out of school, to college applications where we've got, you know, folks coming in to make sure that they've got the most advanced research materials available to them. And we're lucky in this state that we have a coordinated effort. We have made an absolute effort in Minnesota libraries to coordinate and construct a system where it's seamless, where people can get access to information, they get access from library to library. Your library card's good at almost every public library in the state, and many academic libraries allow you to walk in and use their resources at no charge. Now, some of you might be asking, how much is all this costing, right? I mean, you've got the numbers, but really, what does it cost? Libraries in Minnesota have always been, for many years, in the top five of per capita use statistics. So circulation per capita, the number of people attending story times, the number of people asking reference questions per capita. We've always been in the top five, but we've also always been in the middle of the pack when it comes to funding per capita. We are a very efficient and frugal operation in public libraries in Minnesota in particular. When you talk about library systems in Minnesota, you also get the idea that we are working together. You know, when we have the regional public libraries are working with their school partners and working with their multi-site partners to ensure that there's a seamless level of service going on. Cooperation, innovation, collaboration have always been the hallmarks of Minnesota libraries. We've got 50 years of experience working together, and we expect to continue that for the next 50 years and get even better at what we're doing. In conclusion, just let me tell you that there is a handout that I prepared called Libraries in the News that you should have in front of you that just gives a number of pages of articles about libraries in the news. The first section just talked about some of the cuts in library services that have taken place. When people talk about library budgets, particularly, you know, at the local level about where library budgets are going, you can see that libraries are taking cuts along with lots of other parts of government in the last year because of the economy. But then you can also see in that, later on in that list, there's a lot of information about how libraries are being used, the increases in use, and how people really come to love their libraries because they really achieve outcomes for their lives that they need. Thank you, and I'm available to answer questions.
Ms. Keith. Madam Chair, members, again, I'm Elaine Keith, representing the Minnesota Library Association. I've represented libraries at the legislature for over 20 years, so please look upon me as a resource if you have any questions about library issues as you go through this session. I want to focus on the library maintenance of effort issue that Representative Haas raised. And we know that that's a major concern for cities and counties because they're facing big cuts in their state aid. And let me just talk about the fact that we have a history of stepping up in times like this and being willing to negotiate reductions in library maintenance of effort. Back in 1992, we had state budget difficulties, and there were cuts to local government aid and to county aid, and we did negotiate a three-year reduction in library maintenance of effort. And it, similarly, in 2003, there was a two-year reduction that we negotiated. And I don't claim that we're clairvoyant, but over a year ago, we actually did organize a statewide meeting to which we invited city and county folks to sit down with library directors and start to talk about library maintenance of effort and whether there were changes that could be made that we could all agree to. And out of that one-day meeting, we appointed a committee, which we call the Minnesota Library Funding Committee, and we had some county commissioners who had been among the most vocal critics of library maintenance of effort, sit down with some library directors and look at where they could come up with some common ground. And so we have those recommendations. We've been making the rounds and sharing them with people. And in addition, we have been working with a mandate reduction work group chaired by Representative Lanning that was appointed by the House Property Tax Division. And they have come up with some legislation, and we provided some suggestions. That bill was introduced on Monday. And we think it, it does a pretty good job of allowing cities and counties to reduce their library budgets in response to state aid cuts, and also allows those cuts to be made permanent. And so we've made a number of changes. It's a fairly technical issue. I think that legislation, because it's really under the jurisdiction of this committee, not the tax committee, will be coming in front of you at some point. And but if you have specific questions about the technical details, I'd be happy to answer them.
We'll answer them when the bill comes before us. Do we have something about the digital library? Half a minute.
The Minnesota Electronic Library for Minnesota Elm, the digital library in Minnesota, this is the cooperative resource that's available for schools and public libraries around the state. And for citizens, wherever they are, at home or at work, to access information of a wide-ranging nature, everything from school support to information for businesses to information about research and technology. The idea being that we wanted to establish a baseline to provide access to all Minnesotans about for whatever needs that they had, and that includes business needs as well. So we're trying to support that wide range of information needs.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for improving our education on the funding of libraries and the purpose of libraries. If we have questions, we can submit them and have them answered at a later time. Representative Egan?
Yes, I would like to move the minutes from the last meeting.
Representative Egan moves the adoption of the minutes of the 12th meeting, March 2nd, 2009. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted as printed. Minnesota Arts Board, welcome. Ms. Jen, welcome to the committee. Thank you. Former Representative Schumacher, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You are president of the Regional Arts Council, I understand.
I am.
Is that funner?
I miss all of you, but I'm having a good time.
Well, we're glad you're here today.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Jen.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm trying to get my PowerPoint to come up, so that'll take just a second. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Arts Board, and I'm delighted that Leslie is here with me today. We appreciate you giving us some time to give you an overview of the Arts Board and the Regional Arts Council system, the work that we do, the value that we provide to the state of Minnesota. And I will also touch on the financial structure of the system, and also talk about the governor's proposal. And I do hope this will come up. Could you help me, Luke? If you have a handout, so I'm just going to charge ahead in the interest of time, and we'll get the slides to come up when it's possible to do so.
I would like an opportunity to introduce myself as well. I'm Leslie Schumacher. I am the president of the Forum of Regional Arts Councils. I'm also the executive director of the Central Minnesota Arts Board, which is the fourth largest regional arts council out of the 11. And I am a former member of the Vote Yes Steering Committee. And I'm really happy to be here today. Thank you for the invitation.
You're welcome.
Well, we're trying to get our PowerPoint up. I will refer you to the slides that you have in front of you. Very quickly, we're going to give you a little bit of background about the context and the environment for the work that we do here in the state of Minnesota. And then I'll hand it back to Leslie, and she'll talk about some of the benefits that we provide. And then we'll tag team on talking about the Arts Board Regional Arts Council. So we're going to go back and forth. First of all, if you look at your handout, on the bottom of page 1, The purpose of the Arts Board Regionalized Council system is really very simple. Our job is to make sure that all Minnesotans have the opportunity to participate in the arts. Very simple. And that could be direct participation, or it could be indirect participation through some of the other educational and economic benefits that accrue to the state because of the arts, which Leslie is going to be talking about a bit more later. Thank you, Luke. I'm going to give you a couple of slides that just a couple of slides to tell you about why we care about the arts. Why is this important to Minnesota? The first reason is because Minnesotans, your constituents, care about the arts. We know from research and from surveys that have been done that about 65% of Minnesotans participate in the arts every single day in some way in their lives, whether that's taking an art class at the Minnesota Valley Academy of Music, whether that's performing in a community theater production in Springfield or in Albert Lea, whether that's attending a performance at the Paramount or at the Commonweal Theater in Lanesboro. People care about the arts and they participate. We also know that Minnesotans believe that public funding helps to make the arts available and accessible, which is wraps back to that vision about everyone being able to participate. Whether it's an outdoor concert, whether it's a community festival, whether it's free or discounted admission to paid activities, that's what the public funding is there to do. 95% of Minnesotans believe the arts are important or essential in education. Children do better when they've had a chance to study and participate in the arts. There are funding programs in schools throughout the state, you know, Bayville Elementary, the Ada Summer Children's Theater, the Daffel-Cocato School System are just three of the places that have recently been funded through either an Arts Board or a Regional Arts Council grant. And finally, Minnesotans believe that the arts make this a great place to live and to work. This is a place where people want to come, they want to visit here, they want to stay here, they want to set up businesses and become ongoing residents. And the last statistic I'll give you, you're very familiar with. 56% of Minnesotans told us that they would like there to be a greater investment in the arts as a result of the Vote Yes campaign. The reasons we care about the arts are very individual. They're a creative outlet to express our talents. They're quality family entertainment, visiting a museum or attending a play. They're a way that we experience other cultures or come together as a community. But there are also many collective reasons that we think that the arts are important. And Leslie is going to talk to you about the things that the arts do for our state that really make this an important public concern.
Ms. Schumacher. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. First of all, the arts are big business in the state of Minnesota. In 2006, we conducted an economic impact study, and that study was based on actual numbers, not projected numbers. It was also based on volunteerism because we received information and data from organizations throughout the state, nonprofit arts organizations, and as many of you probably know, a lot of them are volunteer organizations. So we didn't get 100% of the information that's out there. We got a fraction of the information. But what that data proved was that we have 1,400 nonprofit arts and cultural organizations in the state of Minnesota that have an $840 million economic impact. They generate over $94 million in local and state government revenue, and there are over 22,000 jobs. More jobs than we even have dentists and, firemen? And I mean, we have a lot of artists and arts-related jobs. There are 30,000 individual artists that generate $200 million in economic impact and $24 million in local and state government revenue. In 2008, I mentioned my organization is the fourth largest in the state, and we received an appropriation from all of you of around $229,000. I used to be here, we talk in millions and then we talk in billions. And what that did was generate $900,000, almost $1 million in economic activity just from those projects that we funded. The arts are a creative investment in our state. The arts strengthen communities and neighborhoods. In my community, We have over 7,000 Somalians that reside just in the city of St. Cloud. We are working with those individuals to utilize the arts to bridge cultures and help to build understanding. The arts also help fuel another important industry, which is tourism. We know that Grand Marais, Lanesboro, New York Mills have all utilized the arts to become destinations. We believe that that can happen statewide. The arts help attract workers in the creative information economies. The arts prepare young people for success. You've probably all heard that when a student is engaged in the arts throughout their education, they score at least 84% points higher on their SAT scores. And the arts brings visibility to our state. We're oftentimes mentioned in our arts organizations are mentioned in the New York Times. People from all over the world travel to Minnesota to experience our arts.
Ms. Jim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've given you a little bit of the why the arts are important and what they do for the state. Now we'll turn to the how we're structured at the Arts Board and how the Regional Arts Council system integrates and connects with the Arts Board. We exist in Minnesota Statute, Chapter 129D. That section of statute outlines the responsibilities of the board, the structure of the board, and defines this system of regional arts councils. And basically, we have a very simple mission statement, which is to stimulate and encourage the creation, performance, and appreciation of the arts in the state. I know that there are some history aficionados on the committee, so just a little bit of trivia. The current system that we have for the Arts Board and Regional Arts Councils was set in place in the late 1970s. But I'm wondering if any members of the committee know when there was a first state arts society created in Minnesota.
1861.
Very close, Madam Chair. It was 1903. There's been a state agency in the state of Minnesota since 1903. Very close. Thank you.
Oh, the chair said it's not very cool.
Very cool. Please continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Minnesota State Arts Board consists of 11 members who are appointed by the governor with the advice and approval of the Senate, and I'm happy that one of our board members, former Senator Ed Oliver, is with us today. A very active member of our board. The board's job really is to be the eyes and the ears of the taxpayers and to make sure that these dollars are doing good work and being used as wisely as possible. The Arts Board also uses about 100 volunteers every year to help us review grant applications and make recommendations to our board on how the dollars should be spent. So we are very citizen-driven. We have a small staff. We have 10 FTEs official. You have an org chart in the back of your handout, and it will show 11 positions only because we have a couple of open spots, so we have a temporary person working with us at the moment. Our four key outcomes, our key expectations, are that we want to provide stable support for arts organizations so that they will be there, so that they will be able to serve residents and citizens of the state of Minnesota. We want to expand learning opportunities by supplementing what's available in schools, introducing young people to artist residencies or taking them to a performance or an exhibition at one of the professional arts organizations we have in the state. We provide strategic support to individual artists, helping them be more successful in their careers. Many individual artists really operate as sole proprietorships. They're small businesses, and so the more successful they can be, the more successful they will be at fueling this arts community that we really enjoy. And finally, with some NEA dollars, we invest some targeted support in what we would consider to be underserved communities, programs for communities of color, some of our arts education programs in greater Minnesota. So those are the four things that we try to accomplish with our grant dollars. I'm going to hand it back to Leslie, who will give you more detail about the Regional Arts Council.
Thank you, Schumacher. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Each of the 11 regional arts councils serves a unique part of the state. They're all governed by a local volunteer board of directors, people that are fully engaged in the communities they represent. And each council develops a biennial plan every 2 years that is based on needs assessments that are conducted within our communities. We reach out to community members for feedback in developing all of our plans. The mission of the forum system is to serve as the voice of and advocate for small arts organizations and community-based activities throughout Minnesota by working in partnership with the Minnesota State Arts Board, Minnesota Citizens for the Arts, and others. Together, we make up a system that employs 24 people and currently distributes almost $3 million annually of the state funding to every geographic region by providing grants and services. It's just a fraction of your state budget. These funds also assist in leveraging other private and public funds. The McKnight Foundation, for example, considers the Regional Arts Councils an integral partner in the delivery of their mission. Each region applies for and receives grants from the McKnight Foundation. Statewide, they contribute approximately $700,000 to the arts through the 11 grants to the Regional Arts Councils. But like all donors in the state and actually in the nation, their endowment is losing value. We work very closely with them, and they have informed us that because of the importance of the Regional Arts Council system to accomplishing their mission, they are working very hard to make sure that if there are any cuts, the cuts will be minimal. Each region is provided provides a unique set of programs that are tailored to the identified needs. We partner with arts and community organizations, schools, artists, as well as local governments to serve our constituency. An example of one of the artist residencies that we provide is to an artist named Fred Uran. Fred is an artist in St. Cloud that came from Africa, and we provide a portion of the funding to bring him into our schools, assist the children in building drums. He explains to them the importance those drums play in African culture, and then at the end of the residency with the students, there's a community event that everyone in the community is invited to attend, and the children drum on their created drums. As I've been out in the community, I have found high school students as well as graduates that still hang on to those drums, and that experience is one of the pivotal points in their and greatest memories in their middle school experience, or junior, actually grade school experience. So it's a tremendous residency to allow students to be exposed to a lot of the arts and culture at the same time. We measure our success through attendance at events. As I mentioned, all of our board members attend events. I attend events. We also measure through audience numbers, community support, as well as economic impact. Our system is fully accountable for every dollar entrusted to us. Each of the grants requires matching dollars to show community support. Many of the events, as I mentioned, are attended by board members and staff to visually assess their success. We also require written reports, final reports, be submitted following each event. We really know at a grassroots level what's going on in the communities we serve as it relates to the arts. Each council is also required to conduct an annual independent audit. The audit is reviewed and approved by each of our respective boards, the Minnesota State Arts Board, the Legislative Auditor, and the McKnight Foundation. We oppose the privatization of the Minnesota State Arts Board because we believe as a state agency, they hold us accountable and they make sure that this process of utilizing state funds is transparent. All decisions are made in a public way. We are subject to the open meeting law and conduct all our business out in the open. We also are concerned that we could jeopardize federal funding if the Arts Board is privatized. We work with all of our partners to build capacity, expand artistic and professional development, promote tourism, support community and economic development, encourage integration of the arts in education, promote accessibility to all and connect Minnesotans to the arts. This system has existed for over 30 years. It's a proven system that gets a great return for the small amount that you invest in it. As a member of the Vote Yes Steering Committee and as a six-year veteran of the current system of regional arts councils under the Minnesota State Arts Board, I really believe that this system is very well poised to distribute and invest the forthcoming constitutional funds.
Madam Chair, if I may, I'll pick up with some of the financial information.
Sure.
Thank you. You have a slide that gives you a summary of the state general fund appropriations to the Arts Board and Regional Arts Council system. I gave you about 12 years. The top slice of the appropriation is the Regional Arts Council line item appropriation. The red slice in the middle is what the Arts Board would use for its operating internal administrative and also the services that we provide. And the blue slice at the bottom of each line is the grant programs that the Arts Board administers. So you get a sense of we were somewhere over $25 million per biennium up until the 2003 legislative session when the state was dealing with a significant deficit. We were reduced by about 32% for fiscal 2004 and 5. That's the dip. We stayed even for 2 years. And then for the current biennium, we have a 19% increase, so we're at just over $20 million for this biennium. The State Arts Board and Regional Arts Councils were created basically to distribute public funding, so the general fund dollars are the most significant source of support for both our activities and the Regional Arts Councils. This slide shows you what our general fund budget request was for fiscal 10 and 11. We had made a request for stable funding using 09 as our base, and then in the 2007 legislative session, there was language written into the law that year that the grants line was supposed to increase to a base of $606.7 million per year. And so that's why that increase was written into the top two lines, the grants program line.
Hold it. Would you go back and say that?
Absolutely, Madam Chair.
About the...
In the 2007 session, when our fiscal 8 and 9 budget was set, there was language that said that for fiscal 10 and 11, the grants line was supposed to increase to $6.7 million. So it was written into the language 2 years ago. So that's why this budget increase is reflected in our budget request. Now, we, like all state agencies, were asked to do a change item in December for a 10% decrease, and what we did is take all of these lines and decrease them by 10%. Our philosophy at the Arts Board has always been all boats rise with the tide, so we try to be very fair and to spread cuts across the entire system rather than having one program or one area absorb those costs. The next slide is the Governor's Fiscal 10 through 13 budget proposal for the Arts Board. I've given you fiscal 8 and 9 as the first starting year in the left-hand column. What the governor has proposed is a 33% reduction for fiscal 10, a 66% reduction for fiscal 11, and then he's proposed no general fund appropriation for the arts in fiscal 12 and 13 and in subsequent years, one would presume. So 100% decrease by fiscal 12. And he's also proposed that by fiscal 12, the Arts Board should cease to be a state agency and should transition into becoming a nonprofit agency. So those are the governor's recommendations. The governor was silent on the legacy amendment dollars. He didn't make a recommendation one way or another in the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. That page was blank in his budget proposal. The Arts Board and Regional Arts Councils obviously are starting to think about and grapple with what these budget cuts might mean, and we can't tell you today exactly what might happen with a 33% and then a 66% cut. We know that grant programs would be reduced, some of them completely eliminated. We know that staff members will lose their jobs, both at the Arts Board and at the Regional Arts Councils. But more importantly, what we're trying to understand is how this will impact those 1,400 organizations, the 30,000 artists that Leslie mentioned. We just don't know. In a moment when the economy for them is also fragile, when they're seeing decreases in their private funding, they're seeing decreases in their public funding, they're seeing decreases in their attendance, they're being hit by the same economic forces that we all are. We need to be careful about assessing what kind of harm could be done based on those cuts. So what we're doing is using a needs assessment that we've done to help inform any decisions that we'll be making. We're talking with the other private funders about where their funding directions are going and what they intend to do and where public dollars would best be spent. And we're also obviously talking to a lot of our stakeholders. The same way the legislature is doing listening sessions, we're talking with our constituents to say, if this happens, where is the best place for those dollars to be spent? So I think I would conclude simply by saying that we know this is a difficult time. We believe that the arts are a significant asset to the state of Minnesota for what they do for us individually and what they do for us collectively. This is an asset that exists because there's been a strong public-private partnership supporting it for decades. And we hope that the current economic challenges won't do long-term damage to that important system that we have in place. I'll leave you with one last thought, and then I'm going to turn it back to Leslie, but just to leave you with a thought from Albert Einstein, that is that imagination is more important than knowledge because knowledge is limited. And the arts are in the imagination business. So we really hope that as you think about the investments that you need to make this year and into the future, that you'll consider that investment in the imagination business. And I will turn it back to Leslie with your permission, Madam Chair.
Ms. Jens, could you give this committee an accounting of the salaries paid to the Arts Board and the Regional Arts Council salaries?
Madam Chair, I don't have the salary figures
submitted.
I will indeed.
Thank you. Ms. Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I really don't have anything further to say other than we certainly respect and understand the challenges that all of you face in balancing our state budget. I particularly understand the difficulty in submitting a budget that addresses all of the needs in the state of Minnesota, having been a member in this body. We are prepared and poised to assist in that process and do our part. We only ask that it's done fairly and that the cuts that are handed down are equitable and uniform in nature.
Thank you. And there will be other times, other opportunities to talk about your vision for the constitutional amendment money. We won't get into that any more today.
Thank you.
Except on one thing. Representative Gray.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Ms. Jens. It was pretty close, only 45 years off. 42 years off, so I can't add. Okay, on the organizational chart, Ms. Jens, I noticed that there's a vacancy there, and to me, and I don't know if that's because of the budget cuts or what, but it seems to me that would be a pretty important one to fill if you can, because it's a government relations director and you kind of like need one right now, because the cuts from the governor were pretty severe, 100%.
Madam Chair, Representative Davis, the reason that position is vacant at the moment is that that's my old position. Recently, I was named the executive director. For the past year, I've been the interim director, and for the years prior to that, I've been the communications and government relations director at the Arts Board. So that position is vacant because I've now moved into this new spot recently.
Well, Madam Chair, Ms. Jens, is that something that you have funding for at this point?
Madam Chair, Representative Davis, at this point, if the salary line that we have is stable, we would have funding to replace that position.
Madam Chair, Ms. Jens, I'd get it replaced.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Chair. I just, looking at your slides and some of the statistics you have, I'm just curious, the 67% of Minnesotans that participated in an arts activity. I'm just wondering how that's gathered. Is that through formal community events? Is that from surveys or people saying maybe in their homes they've participated in painting or a hobby? I'm just curious how that's measured and that particular statistic.
Ms. Ginn.
Madam Chair, Representative Mack. That's a statistic that we received from the Urban Institute and the Pew Charitable Trust that has been doing surveying in key cities around the country, key cities and key geographic regions around the country, to understand the participation and the behavior of folks relating to the arts. So that's not a number that we created. It's something that we got from another researcher.
Thank you very much. Assistant Commissioner Quincy, I asked you to come very briefly. I want to know what Department of Education's idea of art education is. The Constitutional Amendment talks about money for the arts education, and there's a comma, they're separate. They're not the same, maybe. So, please.
Well, thank you. Carolyn Murphy and members of the committee, I'm Karen Klensing, Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Education, and I do oversee the Office of Academic Excellence, which includes libraries, and also the content academic standards, which is where art education falls in our agency. I do, though, need to mention that right now, probably since 1985, a lot of the arts education direction and support has really gone through the Purpose Center for the Arts, which was established to deliver professional development statewide for teachers in arts education. So it was established as a state agency to be a school, but in addition, it was also established to provide services to schools all over the state with regards to art education support and teacher support where art education was considered. So we do, though, from the Department of Education, try to support the Purpose Center with a lot of state agency types of administrative things, and the biggest example is most recently the revision of the academic standards. This is not something that the Purpose School does very often. They do it once every 8 to 9 years for the statutes that came from this body, and we recently then had our academic standards director help walk them through that process, and we have contracted then with Mike Hyatt at the Purpose Academy for his support on the content side of that. That being said, we do think that arts are an important part of a student's academic background. As directed by the legislature, it is one of the five content areas where this body has put into statute that there must be academic standards for the subject of the arts delivered to the students. And this is one of the areas where the legislature said local standards should not apply. This is where state standards must be in place. So we just finished revising the 2004 standards and have now are going to have going through rulemaking a set of new state standards in the arts that all schools will need to deliver across the state. In support of that, we will work with the Purpose Center to ensure that professional development is delivered, and also encourage districts then to use their professional development money for this purpose. We do not have a specific professional development set out of funds at the agency for this purpose. We don't have there is not a categorical funding stream for that. It's a local decision as to how they are going to spend their professional development dollars. The most recent example of a pot of money that we have that is professional development money is the math and science teacher centers, but that's a very recent phenomenon that we've put that at the state level. So those are some of the things that we have done. Really, our biggest involvement has been in the state art standards, in which case the Purpich Center for the Arts has really been the content expert on those set of standards.
Assistant Commissioner Klinzing, could you share the draft of those standards with this committee, please?
Yes, we will do that.
And if I remember correctly, the governor's recommendation was to turn this Purpich Center into a charter school. Was that, was the idea to continue having them work with the departments on the standards and the performance, the things that you said that you do with the Purpich Center, would that continue?
Very good question, Representative Murphy. I think that those details are yet to be hashed out. I think that there is a big focus at the Purpich Center on the running of the school and the school itself. And so as we work through, should that become law, I mean, you have not made those decisions yet in this body, and that has not been come to a conclusion with the end of session and negotiations you're going to do with the governor. So at this point, I'm explaining the roles as they are. But should that change, I would guess that we need to put those roles and responsibilities somewhere, and we will just need to hash out the details of whether we want them to be in the charter school or at the state education agency.
And do you think you will be accepting advice from legislators?
Chair Murphy, we're always accepting advice from legislators.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Assistant Commissioner Klinzing. Actually, my question is pretty much in line with what you were saying regarding the Purpich Center and questions about what relationship the department would have with the Purpich Center if it became a charter school, and perhaps you've answered that. I would just hope that the state of Minnesota can maintain the level of commitment to the arts that the people expect us to.
Chair Murphy, members of the committee, I just want to mention with respect to that too, I think it would be good for us to take some advice from the rest of the state that's not in a close proximity to the Purpich Center for the Arts, to see what their response would be to who they think would best serve their interests with regards to arts education and professional development.
Thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned.